Welcome to Nerd and Tie. Tonight we'll be talking about Sleepy Hollow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Almost Human, Dracula, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, and The Tomorrow People. It's our Fall TV Spectacular! Hello, internets. Welcome to Nerd and Tie, the only podcast with a dress code. Tonight, we've got quite an array of topics, and to talk about them, as always, we've got Trey Dorn.
Hello, hello, hello.
Joining us this week, in place of fur, is the indescribable Brian Arkhamize Novak.
Hello.
He's our fake fur.
I am fake fur.
And pretending that he knows what he's doing, as always, is me, Nick Izumi. So it's good to be with all of you today, even if it's only digitally.
Woohoo!
Yeah!
And we've got a special episode, don't we?
We have a very special episode. We're just we're not going to really vary much in terms of the topics. It's going to be both varied and not varied, because really have one topic that we're splitting into multiple topics, which is genre shows for fall 2013.
Woohoo! New stuff.
And
yeah.
A lot of new stuff, like an outrageous amount of new stuff, really. Like, I'm almost not used to this many new genre shows coming out in one season.
And all of these are broadcast, I want to point out. None of these are cable.
Yeah, no. That in and of itself is pretty crazy, and who knows, maybe some of it'll stick, and maybe we'll have some unexpected surprises. Last year, Arrow was definitely that show for me, so maybe I'll have another show that I'll watch as a joke, and I'll end up actually liking it. But I guess the only place to start would be a couple of the ones that have already been airing for a couple weeks now. Well, this one's been airing for a couple weeks anyway. I guess we'll start with Sleepy Hollow, the new supernatural thriller on Fox.
Yeah, it's on Fox, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, it is on Fox. Isn't that weird? Sleepy Hollow is about as closely related to The Legend of Ichabod Crane as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is related to Ed Gein.
It makes the Johnny Depp film look very close to the legend, and that's hard to do.
That's a great way of putting it. The series follows Ichabod Crane, a former Oxford history teacher, colonial army spy, and the most progressive person of the 1700s, apparently.
Apparently.
Well, you know.
As he conveniently was pro-abolition and turned away from the Redcoats as soon as he saw the American plight. And one time while talking to George Washington, he found out the American Revolution is not just a revolution for freedom, but also a war to stop the apocalypse.
You know, I want to point out, for an abolitionist, he sure did hang out with a lot of slave owners back then.
Yeah, I was...
Yeah, I did.
Like I said, the most outrageously progressive person of his time.
Yeah.
And after beheading one of the first horsemen of the apocalypse, the Rider of War, he's somehow transported to the modern age, I guess because his wife was a witch.
And he's very comfortable with that.
Yeah.
He handles it distressingly well. And he's teamed up with a female black cop, and she apparently also had a demonic encounter at one point, and they have teamed up to prevent the apocalypse, I guess.
Because Lord knows, television needs one more show with people stopping the apocalypse.
Yes, all of the apocalypses. I'm sure they're
so
plural.
I don't even know what to make of this show.
You know, well, okay, so on one hand, it's kind of popcorn entertaining. It's like, I've been watching it these last couple weeks, and I've been enjoying it. But the instant any part of me that, you know, knows a great deal about history or looks at anything with a critical eye, it all starts to fall apart into a pile of dust. Like, him knowing, like, secret passages that are somehow still there, even though they've been boarded over for a century, you know, in the back of the police station. Last time I checked, that's the sort of thing that would have been very either renovated or replaced at this point. I don't know. The entire thing is just sort of like, there are good witches and bad witches and sandwiches. And
it's history lessons from National Treasure. Like,
it makes National Treasure look like an accurate depiction of the formation of the United States. But okay, so overall, I've been enjoying it, but there's some problematic stuff that I always have a problem with, which is whenever we take the Founding Fathers and make them like these like more than human heroes, you know, like George Washington wasn't just trying to break free from, you know, taxation without representation. No, he was trying to defeat the devil. You know,
yeah, that I find really uncomfortable and extremely problematic.
I don't like equating George Washington as a warrior of God.
Those wooden teeth helped him fight off vampires, I'm sure.
Well, you know what the funny, if it was just vampires, I'd be fine. It's the full-blown Judeo-Christian apocalypse. You know,
yeah, Trey hit it on the head. That's pretty much precisely what bothered me the most, was this really uncomfortable religious, nationalistic religious symbolism that I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's like, I very much enjoy, like, you know, I have no problem watching a show about the Judeo-Christian apocalypse. I'm a big fan of Supernatural. It's But the difference is that they didn't equate historical figures into some, well, okay, so they equated some historical figures, but not the historical figures we think of as important historical figures.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, they didn't turn Lincoln into a hunter, although another movie did, but, you know,
there's a fine line between, I mean, like the scene in Helsing where it's implied that Queen Elizabeth has sanctioned a group of vampire hunters in England, and George Washington is the savior of the world, literally.
Right. George Washington fighting vampires, fine, I can deal with that. George Washington fighting witches, as a Wiccan, I will accept and deal with their mythological version of use of that word, but fine, I can deal with that. George Washington versus Satan himself for the souls of mankind. You have lost me.
Yeah.
It makes the British look bad too, especially when the rider of war is still wearing his red coat.
You know, they were red coats. You know who else wears red? Satan.
Dun dun dun.
What an amazing deduction.
So, is the show well acted? Yes. Is it entertaining on a surface level? Yeah. But I believe it is important to watch the show with a critical eye and understand what you're seeing.
My biggest hope for this show is that the showrunner will get replaced with someone who realizes how stonking ridiculous it is, and that we can get an episode with Bruce Campbell, because I feel like this show needs Bruce Campbell.
Pretty stellar.
Who is the showrunner for Sleepy Hollow? I feel like, isn't that,
I'm not sure.
It's created by Kurtzman and Orsi.
Oh yeah, that's right.
God. And then, like, along with Philip Iskov and Len Wiseman. I don't know who the showrunner is, though. Like, you know, because the Bad Robot Productions just pitched a whole bunch of stuff at the wall and saw what sticks, but who knows who's actually, you know, working on it.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Yeah. It's I don't know.
But Cushman and Orsi have never done anything problematic. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, of course not. Everything that they do is, you can never construe it as racist or somewhat...
or sexist or...
or in bad taste, yeah. They never do anything.
No,
like that.
No, never. Transformers 2. Anyways. Into Darkness. So that's Sleepy Hollow, folks.
Yeah.
That's our Monday night show.
It's a special show.
That's Monday nights at 9 Eastern, 8 Central on Fox.
Yep. And so next up on our list is the new show just premiered this last Monday.
Tuesday.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is continuing the story of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that we met in the Avengers movie series, and kind of a continuation of their exploits, if you will. Not as much focus on the superheroes that we have the movies of, but more on the agents that make up the agency known as S.H.I.E.L.D., including... So for those that remember him from the movies, Coulson is returning as one of the main characters in the show, along with a team of other agents such as Melinda May, Grant Ward, Sky, Leo Fitz, and Gemma Simmons. Some of those, I imagine, I'm not very well versed on the Marvel series themselves, but I imagine some of those are actual characters from...
I don't believe so. I think, Phil Coulson's been introduced into other media since his appearance in the series, but I believe that all of these characters are original to the cinematic universe.
Gotcha.
Yeah, a lot of new Whedon characters, but...
Yeah, it's like Maria Hill, Kobe Smulders' character, who she played in The Avengers and who has a guest star in the first episode. She's from the comics, but the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. characters are all original, because that way you don't have to pay creator rights on them.
Yeah.
But
Tom Paris all over again.
What do you want to bet me that by this time next year they're going to be characters in the Marvel comics?
Oh, absolutely.
If the show actually stays popular.
Probably. That'd be awesome.
I think it will. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s ratings for their first episode, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I was reading earlier, is better. Their first episode had higher ratings than any episode of Smallville. It had higher ratings than the highest average ratings for Lois and Clark, their highest average season. And that's the 90s, where it was much easier to get good ratings because there were fewer options available for primetime television then. Because the cable networks weren't making original programming in the 90s. Or at least not primetime original programming, I should say. But Red Shoe Diaries, no. Doesn't count. Silk Stockings doesn't count.
Characters welcome.
but anyways, so the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I watched the first episode. I liked it. I was not as impressed by it as I wanted to be for a series written by Joss Whedon. I have hopes that the show is going to get better. Like, I would say here, it's not that it was bad. It was good. I overall liked the episode, but I was expecting, when I saw Avengers, I was blown away. I was not blown away by this. I was merely, oh, that was good. But I can get that reaction watching an episode of Bones. You know what I mean?
Mm. It seemed like it was kind of very small in scope, thinking of even just locations, that it was the different spaces that we saw during the episode. It never seemed like we went to a lot of places, a lot of grandiose places. There were a lot of in-type areas, but... I'm optimistic, but that's because I'm an optimist. I really enjoyed it myself. I'm definitely looking forward to finding out a lot of the little like mysteries that they've kind of seeded in the episode. Like all these characters seem to have past, some of them interconnecting. Agent Coulson, we saw a lot of his, but even his reason for coming back. His reason for being alive. Yeah, the reason for him being alive. They even hinted at that like, he doesn't even know what happened to him. So that'll be really interesting to see unfold. Yeah. If they ever will, maybe they'll just leave it as a mystery.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, like, going through the list of characters, we've got Clark Gregg is Phil Coulson, who, again, we know from Sid. Now, I've been a fan of Clark Gregg ever since I saw him say Quo Vadimus on Sports Night a decade ago. So I like Clark Gregg. He was great on in Sports Night, great on The West Wing. He's pretty much... He actually was watchable on New Adventures of Old Christine, which was a terrible show. So, I mean, Clark Gregg could read the phone book and it would be entertaining, and he would do it with a wry smile. So I'm good with that. We've got Ming-Na Wen as Melinda May. And I think that they've done well with her character, bringing in a character who is obviously got some stuff in her past where she doesn't want to be, you know, where she is, which is why she's quote unquote just the pilot. And so I think those two characters I think are really good. And I really like the two techs, Fitz and Simmons. They're very entertaining. Now where it starts to get kind of weaker on me is first off, Grant Ward, the like kind of like the James Bondy spy on the team, played by Brett Dalton. He's not super likable. I don't think he's supposed to be likable, so I'm kind of okay with it, but he just kind of comes off as a bit of a dick, and I think he's supposed to just be likable because he's attractive. And then but worst off, I felt like Chloe Bennett as Sky, who's the computer hacker, who's their, you know, who they pretty much, you know, forcibly recruit in the first episode after she breaks into their stuff. I felt she was a perfectly fine actress. Like, you know, I think she acted the hell out of that part, but it felt so cliched, and the supposed chemistry between her and the Grant Ward character felt really forced, and so I want to see something else happen there, but that's just me.
I really enjoyed that they decided to root the show so much in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, that's unprecedented.
I'm hoping that the next episodes will continue to stay rooted there without feeling the need to name drop all these like pieces of tech and characters that we know, because in some ways that could hurt the show in reminding you that there are these people having these epic adventures and you're watching something more small scale.
Right. Well, but
at the same time, it was really fun to see Agent Coulson. I never like when characters get brought back from the dead, with an exception for the Winter Soldier story arc from the Captain America comics. So that always makes me on edge, and I was surprised by how well they handled Coulson being there. Mm-hmm. And words cannot describe how happy I am that the flying cars from S.H.I.E.L.D. are here. Oh my, like, those are such a major... They've had those since the 60s in the comics, and those are the thing that in the movies I'm like, they're never going to use these. But then again, I saw a helicarrier in Avengers, and I'm like, maybe they'll do the flying cars.
And by God, there's Lola.
Exactly. There's the cars. I'm really happy that one of the weirdest parts of the comics is on screen now.
Well, I think there's a lot of potential in the series for exploring this world, like this world with people with superpowers from the regular human being point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
which was like a focal point for the episode.
Yeah. Now, I mean, too bad we don't have mutants, because the X-Men franchise is still owned by Fox. Because we could go into the whole Mutant Registration Act and, ooh, fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, still, like, we started to see a little bit of that in Iron Man 3, and I'm happy that we got more of it here. The fact that just what happened in Avengers has, like, profoundly affected people in this world. It's like, whoa, nothing we know makes sense anymore.
I want to point out the damage in Avengers was contained and nothing compared to the damage in Man of Steel. So I'm just saying, Marvel's beaten DC for, you know, human life costs there. Bah. Anyways, let's move on. Moving on to things that have not yet premiered.
Mysterious.
Fancy Pants. Happy Dog. Next up is actually something I've been looking forward to, mostly because it stars Carl Urban, which is Almost Human, comes out on November 4th on Fox, because Fox is apparently going to pick up as many, you know, science fiction franchises as possible and cancel it. But, you know, like Sleepy Hollow, which has got Orci and Kurtzman producing, this one's got J.J. Abrams producing, so...
Good heavens.
And also Brian Burke. So apparently we're going to get the whole new Star Trek team producing shows on Monday nights on Fox. I'm not kidding. The series is it's a near-future science fiction. To quote the Wikipedia article, so I don't have to come up with anything original, the series is set 35 years into the future, when humans in the Los Angeles Police Department are paired up with lifelike androids, as a detective who has a dislike for robot ends up being teamed up with one with emotions.
It's like Blade Runner, the TV show.
It's like Blade Runner, the RoboCop.
I'm okay with this.
I'm
this
okay
could be
with
cool.
it, too. Man, it's I'd rather watch this than the RoboCop remake. I'm still angry about that. Listen to a previous episode to hear my opinions. But yeah, so it I mean, the cast looks solid. The showrunner got quit after the pilot, so they had someone else write the rest of the season. So I don't know if the pilot, when that actually airs in November, is going to be anything to go on for the rest of the series.
Yeah, that's kind of a bad sign when you bring that part up.
Well, but to be fair, that also happened with Dead Like Me.
Oh, well. I have nothing to say.
So
I'm an optimist, so it'll turn out great.
Well, and you know, there's good things. It's like, you know, Falling Skies did not lose quality when its showrunner left after the first season because he thought the show was going to get canceled, so he took another job. that show's still going. It could be good. And the guy who is showrunning is the creator. So, it was Naren Shankar who left. And let's see what Naren Shankar is responsible for. Wikipedia, give me answers. Well, he was Naren Shankar was a writer for Farscape, CSI, Grimm, that's good, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. You know, hey.
I got excited when you said DS9, but then...
Hey, you know, all the DS9 writers went to Voyager after that show got canceled. That's why the last couple seasons of Voyager are better. Yeah, he only wrote one episode of Voyager, which is Heroes and Demons. Oh, that's the Beowulf episode. That one's awesome. Yeah. The Doctor gets laid in that one. With a holographic character who only knows how to repeat certain, like, conditions. So it's kind of weird. I don't know. Like, so we're talking about Almost Human, and we're going to go back to that in a second. But can I just say, the implications of Sex of the Holodeck character are just strange to me.
Yeah.
Is that masturbation?
Honestly, it just makes me think about that scene in Battlestar Galactica when Starbuck walks in on Baltar having one of his fantasies in season one, and it's just like, what the hell?
Anyways, Almost Human.
So Almost Human.
Carl Urban, man. Carl.
I like Carl Urban a lot.
Carl Urban is a likable human being. He is. And it's, Carl Urban's great. Caesar. No one else watched Xena. Anyways,
I haven't watched Xena in so long.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Carl Urban as well. I like that he's getting more lead roles recently.
But he'll never be able to use his actual accent.
Aww.
Aww. What is his actual accent?
He's from New Zealand.
Ah.
That's why he was on Xena.
Why did Flight of the Conchords have to get canceled?
It didn't get canceled. They ended the show because they didn't feel like they could keep the show going at the same quality.
Okay. Replace canceled with what you just said and the question still stands.
Hey, man, you got the Muppets? And yeah, the next Muppet film, Brett's writing the songs for the next Muppet film also.
Which is awesome.
And Jermaine got to be the bad guy in Men in Black 3.
Someone got the better deal here.
Hey, Men in Black 3 was better than Men in Black 2 by far. Men in Black 3 was an entertaining film.
You see, I haven't seen Men in Black 3 yet because I just... Men in Black 2 burned me so bad.
Men in Black 2 is... just pretend it didn't happen. You don't need to know anything about it. Just forget it. Burn it from your memory. Men in Black 3, actually good. It's not as good as the first movie, but it's still entertaining. But... Anyways, we should move on.
Yeah, moving on. The next one, I believe, is Dracula.
Hooray.
Which is a new British-American series coming from, is it NBC?
Yes. NBC, yes.
And it's apparently, I'm not as familiar with this, but it's a reimagining of the classic Dracula novel by Bram Stoker.
I'm unfamiliar with that source material.
Yeah, we haven't seen it in so long.
Why don't they adapt that into anything? Like movies,
you know,
comic
I'm surprised
books,
we haven't
anime.
Seen any vampire TV series or movies, like, in so long. You know?
Yeah.
Actually, it shocks me that it took them this long to finally make something based off of Dracula. You know, it's, like, it amazes me that, like, I mean, there have been Dracula imitations, but, you know, no one's tried the Twilight Dracula for a while. So,
Yeah, you know, this one's boasting a lot of the cast from the book, as it were.
So the real Dracula starring in the series, huh?
Yeah.
We're getting...
complete with Jonathan Harker, Mina Murray, and Abraham Van Helsing himself. I wonder if it'll be an old guy or a Hugh Jackman lookalike.
Can I just point out the Wikipedia article on this describes Jonathan Harker as a gauche journalist who's desperate to climb the ranks of the aristocracy? Some Wikipedia editor wrote gauche in here, and I'm just impressed that someone writing Wikipedia has a vocabulary.
That is interesting.
I'm sorry.
You know, so it'd be really interesting.
It's probably copied from a press release.
For this, is if it was written, or if it's presented in the same way that the book is written, which is journal entries from all these characters, like it's all past tense. Like all this stuff already happened.
So are they doing it as a period piece? I actually don't know much about this series. I haven't watched the trailer or anything.
I believe it's period. I want to say
that would be kind of fun, at least.
Okay, so the premise, according to what I've got here, is Dracula comes to London posing as an American entrepreneur, which just means we didn't feel like hiring a guy with an accent, who wants to bring modern science to the Victorian society. In reality, Dracula seeks revenge on those who betrayed him centuries earlier. As Dracula's plans move towards fruition, he falls hopefully in love with a woman who may be a reincarnation of his deceased wife.
I remember that from the book.
Right, no, that's...
That totally happened.
That's pretty much what he's doing. I mean, he's not pretending to be an American in the original book, but again, that lets you have an American actor in the lead.
That's true.
Although, let me see here. Except for the fact that Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, And by the way, you have no idea how disappointing it is to get to the Myers in the name Jonathan Rhys Meyers. He's Irish. Dracula, well. They got an Irish guy playing. So they did pay for a guy with an accent, just the wrong one.
Wait, I just, the image, like, this could be awesome. This could be like having good old Scottish Sean Connery being a Russian. I mean...
Oh, you mean like good old Scottish Sean Connery being an Egyptian? Who dressed like a Spaniard?
Great film, Highlander.
Yes. But, okay, so, I mean, Daniel Knopf, the creator of Carnival, is the showrunner for this. It could be okay, but so it's going to be on After Grimm, which means it's going to be on 10/9 Central on NBC when it premieres on October 25th. Which is not a great time. I mean, okay, so Grimm's done fine in that time slot. But Grimm is dude Buffy, so I mean it's complete with writers from the Whedon staff. So, like, of course that's been okay. But I don't know. I have a feeling Dracula is gonna last for. No, you know what this is? This is NBC doing a joint production with a foreign country. So we're gonna get Saving Hope / The Listener out of this, where the first season / Merlin. Where a season airs on NBC, and then NBC cancels it, but it keeps getting made overseas.
Yeah, you know, the only thing that bugs me as I look at, like, this thing, the whole idea of Dracula claiming he's bringing science to Victorian society, does this mean that we're going to get another piece of genre fiction that's weirdly anti-science?
No, it's going to be one half Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, one half Murdoch Mysteries, of course. Oh, no one watches Murdoch Mysteries.
I'm sorry, I don't know.
I watch too many Canadian TV shows. It's on Netflix. You should watch it. It's funny. The problem is I've got a really great metaphor, but none you guys wouldn't understand my reference points because I watch weird things. So we're just going to move on, if that's okay.
Well, that Dracula sure was fun.
We are breezing through these topics, so we can feel free to go back to things. This is great. So, speaking of vampires, you know, there's a spin-off coming up on network television that, starts at the No. It's a spin-off of an existing show, and of course I mean The Originals, but we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the other spin-off show starting with No, and that is Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. Yes, I know I could have added The Originals to the list, but we just talked about vampires, and it looks stupid.
Yeah.
Once Upon a Time in Wonderland is a spinoff of course, I don't know if you were aware, but it's a spinoff of Once Upon a Time.
What?
Now, the story behind this show is highly entertaining to me. You see... In the earlier seasons of Once Upon a Time, they established the existence of Wonderland and built these stories around it. And, Cora turned out to be the Queen of Hearts, so spoiler if you haven't watched the last season.
Or any of it.
But the reason why they brought all this stuff in was because the popularity of the Hatter character, of the Mad Hatter,
Bucky Barnes.
Who was played by Sebastian Stan, who we also know as Bucky Barnes from Captain America. There's going to be a spoiler here for Captain America, the Winter Soldier, so plug your ears and sing along.
It's been
something.
In the comics since 2007. If you don't know at this point, I have no sympathy.
But we have listeners who don't read the comics. Thank you. But okay, yeah. so this whole series was originally going to be built around Hatter. The whole point was that they wanted to do Hatter, but the instant they got a green light to make it, you know who was going to be way too busy shooting the Winter Soldier? Sebastian Stan. And so the entire thing got rejiggered.
Obviously, he's just doing flashbacks to Bucky Barnes from World War II, Trey. I don't see any spoilers there.
Oh, of course.
Is the cap cowl just another hat that he wears?
So, anyway. Anywho, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland is, of course, going to follow Alice in Wonderland. I don't know if you're familiar with Alice in Wonderland. It was a book.
and it's trippy as balls.
Now, the original plan was that they were going to air this when Once Upon a Time wasn't airing new, but then they said, what the heck, screw it, we're going to put this on a Thursday instead of a Sunday nights. And so it's starting on October 10th on 8 Eastern, 7 Central, you crazy people in your 7 o'clock primetime. And who gives a crap when it airs in Pacific and Mountain?
I'm sure they do.
Well, I'm sure they do. I don't know. And to be fair, I like people in the Mountain and Pacific time zones. I have friends in the Mountain and Pacific time zones. This isn't like when I say fuck the South.
Damn it, Frank.
All hate mail can be directed to nerdandtie.thonline.com and click on the contact form and tell me exactly how much you don't like me, and I'll tell you where to shove your Confederate flag. All right. Not that I have opinions. So Once Upon a Time in Wonderland is going to take place in the same expanded universe as Once Upon a Time. They plan on doing crossovers. It's Jane Espenson is one of the producers. This looks like it's going to be promising. And again, it's going to take place then in these bizarro... expect Disney influence because it's ABC. It's going to be a very Disney version of the Alice in Wonderland visuals. And of course, expect more Lost references because they can't get enough of making Lost references on Once Upon a Time.
I'd be lost without them.
Well, you know what's really funny is that, I don't know, have either of you watched the main series Once Upon a Time?
I watched a bit of season 2, and then I guess I lost interest after a while.
I'm planning to get around to it sometime. It's on Netflix.
Yes, it is. Well, the thing about, they keep dropping in, like, fake brand names from Lost constantly, like the Apollo candy bars and Oceanic Airlines and, like, all that stuff. And so there is a group of people who theorize that Once Upon a Time takes place in the Lost universe, which...
That could be fun.
Kind of makes more sense when you consider the shit that's happened. You know, this is going to be like our worst language on one of these episodes. I apologize to the listeners of America, all 10 of you.
Don't look at me. I'm saying Hobisky.
Unless you're in the
Snoke.
South, and then I don't care. If you're a good person and you're in the South, by God, get out of there. I will say that they've got Jafar is going to be a character in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
It's barbaric, but hey, it's home.
You know, I actually remember the version that with the original lyric that happens before that. And that was the version still playing when I saw that in the theaters. That's how old I am.
How they'll cut off your ear if they don't like your face?
Yeah, but the guy playing Jafar is going to be Naveen Andrews from Lost. He played Saeed, if you don't know who that is.
Ah.
Okay.
That can be fun.
I never watched Lost.
Well, you know what's funny is that Naveen Andrews keeps playing Middle Eastern guys. Dude's Indian.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a British Indian actor, and he keeps playing Arabs, because Americans can't tell the difference between brown people.
I guess not.
Because we're all a bunch of racists.
I guess so.
I blame Brian, because he's new.
On a happier note, I do like the idea of the kind of cross-show storylines. I think I always find those really fun.
I like expanded
universes, like Buffy and Angel,
yeah.
And
when
sure
Buffy and
others.
Angel ended up on different networks having the unofficial, like, cross-episode stuff between episodes, where actors don't actually appear on each other's programs, but they then talk about what happened between the episodes on the next one.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah, so...
Because it rewards people for watching all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, no, it's, I think, so, I mean, ABC, I think, ABC, well, think about it, ABC's two big genre shows this season are the Once Upon a Time shows and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., both of which are part of larger universes.
Can we open that up to kind of maybe even a bigger discussion? Do you guys think, like, larger cinematic universes, per se, are going to be a thing? Like, is that going to be more of, like, a, because up until fairly recently, the only time you had huge multi-franchise crossovers were, like, monster movies.
Yeah.
Like the Toho monsters and the Universal monsters. But now we're seeing that with the superheroes and with Once Upon a Time. Do you think that's going to be a new trend?
I hope it is. I've always been a fan of the expanded universe, although there's some weird stuff with, if you trace all the crossovers that shows had in, like, the 80s and 90s, they all intersect with St. Elsewhere, which turned out to be an autistic kid's dream. And,
right.
And then you get weird things like Dallas, which had a spin-off that spun off during the season that turned out to be a dream. Like, okay, so Dallas, I don't know. Okay, so Bobby Ewing was a character on Dallas. He died in one season. And they had a whole season with him dead. There was a spin-off of the show which talked about Bobby Ewing being dead. All right, in the spinoff, but then it turned out the entire season where he had died was a dream, and he's in the show. But that means that there's this entire other television series, which is part of that dream.
Well, you get the similar problem with the Universal Monsters.
Is what do you do with Munch?
When you look at the original Frankenstein and then Bride of Frankenstein. Part of the framing device for those movies is that Mary Shelley won't let her guests go home because she's telling them the story of this monster.
Yeah.
But then in Frankenstein Meets the Werewolf, or Meets the Wolfman, we have Larry Talbot, the character from the Wolfman, wanders into the town from Frankenstein, and it's the same monster. So does this mean that Mary Shelley is still in her living room not letting people go home and being like, well, first you got to hear about this wolf guy.
Oh, well, here's another thing for you. Munch. Richard Belzer's character, Munch. He started on Homicide, Life in the Street. And there's the Law and Order universe, which includes, you know, the Homicide and all the Law and Order shows and Deadline and Conviction. And, right.
And Law and Order UK.
And Law and Order UK. And also that one, oh, what is it called? It was the, it was a USA show about, some U.S. Marshals were witness protection.
Oh, Without a Trace.
Yeah, Without a Trace. That had a crossover with Criminal Intent, so that's also in the expanded universe. And all that's fine. Okay, you can imagine that Munch exists in all of these shows. He fits right in. But Munch has also shown up on The X-Files and on Arrested Development. There are more shows, too, but I just want to point out, Do the X-Files, Arrested Development, and Law & Order all take place in the same universe?
I'm going to say yes.
Well, if this were DC, this would mean that we need to just reboot and delete everything.
Well,
and just hope to God that we can make something that makes more sense.
The real answer is that they're just alternate reality versions of Munch in the non-compatible law universes to the Law & Order universe. But, you know, that's less entertaining.
Yes.
Crisis on Infinite Law and Orders. That's all I'm saying.
Oof. But I will say with the expanded universe concept, I'm always a fan. I think it's an artifact of the way we view things now, with access to. You know, it used to be that movies had to be completely self-contained because people didn't have the ability to watch things at home. You know, they'd need to know everything when they come into the theater and leave the theater. It's the same reason why, without the ability to record things, it used to be that shows, like if you go into the 70s, you watch an episode of Rockford Files, you don't have to see any other episode of Rockford Files.
Right.
You know, you watch an episode of Magnum P.I., you don't need to know anything. And it started with the VCR. And then it's more and more like you take a look at like the 90s is when genre shows started to experiment with it. Like Deep Space Nine had to like fight Paramount to get their like 8-part episodes in. And then it really took off, and then it went really more mainstream in the 2000s once DVRs were introduced, and that's when shows like Lost got to go in as completely serious. Well, of course, that's great if you look at the show Bible for Lost, is they created a fake show Bible to send to the networks claiming it would be episodic, knowing that they were going to do one long story, which I kind of love that they just outright lied to ABC. That's when you get really the serialized television, and so I think the ability to record in time shift is created. I think it started with being able to do serialized television, and then it's now with access to streaming movies, where you have access to half the films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe are available on Netflix right now to stream. So if you need to know information and to go back, it's much easier to access and watch the background information. I think that's what's leading to the increase in persistent universes. And it used to be something that you'd only find in like a syndicated show like Star Trek, which got to have its persistent universe,
right?
And now has a persistent spin-off universe, but still, whether you like the new Star Trek movies or not, they do actually fit with the split of the timeline. Although I didn't like the way Klingons looked, but that's just a personal thing. I think it's an artifact as the experiments in genre fiction are now making their way into mainstream. Because Once Upon a Time in Wonderland may be, it is a genre show in the sense that it's an urban fantasy story. It is a mainstream viewers. This is not a genre audience. This is a mainstream right. audience who are really kind of coming at this from all angles. So, I don't know.
I'm looking forward to seeing where it takes us. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of advantages in the genre fiction. Like I mentioned before, I'm into Arrow, and I'm pretty excited to hear that they might have The Flash making his debut Arrow.
I just couldn't get into Arrow. And by God, but they're also making a Flash movie. Like, we really don't need one Barry Allen, let alone two Barry Allens in modern media. But that's just me. Barry Allen's boring.
I agree with you there. I'm just like the
Barry Allen and Hal Jordan need to get onto a bus and then pull a Veronica Mars season 2. There we go. And if you don't understand the reference, that's okay. But you should go watch Veronica Mars season 2.
I was about to say, conveniently, if you don't understand the reference, we were just talking about how recorded media makes it so you can understand the reference.
Yes.
And you should also go watch all the Veronica Mars episodes before the movie comes out.
as a last, related to this question of the expanded universe, do you see Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ever stumbling across Captain Hammer?
No.
Oh.
I would love that, but probably
you're
not.
More likely going to see Nathan Fillion wearing a Captain Hammer costume on Castle. Yeah, you're more likely to see Nathan Fillion dressing up as Captain Hammer on Castle than you are to see him show up as Captain Hammer on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I feel like that'll happen.
Well, he's already dressed up as Malcolm Reynolds.
That's true.
And then walked through a graveyard and made Buffy references. It's... Because he did play Caleb on Buffy.
I would just love to... I guess going back to the expanded universe and even the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing, I'd love to have some of the C-listers from the Marvel Universe show up. No one big.
Yeah, like Luke Cage.
Yeah, Luke Cage, Iron Fist.
Yeah, all the racist characters. No, they're not anymore. Luke Cage is pretty cool now. I'm just saying, when he was originally created, there were some issues. I don't know, I want Squirrel Girl.
Oh my God! Can you imagine if they did they went to like Wisconsin and there's the Great Lakes Initiative?
Oh my God! I don't care. I just want Squirrel Girl. Could you imagine that episode?
Are you serious? That's your power? And then like she does something great.
Hey, Squirrel Girl is the most powerful superhero in the entire Marvel universe.
I'm coming to terms with that,
and
it frightens me.
And she wants. Had a intimate relationship with Wolverine. And she is able to kick his ass. And of course she's defeated Doctor Doom twice. And it's canon.
I know, it wasn't a Doom bot even. It's Wow.
Yeah. So she's like the only like for confirmed person to defeat Doctor Doom. So I'm just saying, I would love to see Clark Gregg going up against Squirrel Girl. Who the hell would you have playing Squirrel Girl?
I don't even have any.
Ellen Page.
Ellen Page?
Yes.
But she's already Shadow Cat, isn't she?
But that's not in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. If we were going to say that, we'd say...
as Shadow Cat.
We've already got Johnny Storm and, you know, Captain America the same guy.
That's true.
You know, if it's not Marvel Universe if it's not Marvel Cinematic Universe proper, it don't count. The X-Men movies don't count when it comes to Cinematic Universe, so...
Which makes me really sad still, kind of.
Well, yeah.
Some of them, anyway.
Okay, yeah, the first two, and then First Class, and the latest one. The second Wolverine movie, not the first Wolverine movie.
You know, 4 out of 6 movies being good is not bad for a track record.
No, it's not. It's just that 3 and Wolverine Origins are just so bad.
Yeah, well, 3 you can't pay me to watch. That is, I actually hate that one.
I knew going into that movie that it wasn't good the first shot where they had Wolverine taller than Cyclops. In the first two movies, they go to great pains to make sure that the actor playing Cyclops is on a platform whenever Wolverine walks into the room. Like it's and they make sure that they shoot it on angles where Cyclops is always taller in the first two movies. And then come the third movie, and Hugh Jackman's at his full 6'1", and they're not even trying. You know that it's like that they've given up. That the director doesn't care about the details. And when you don't care about a detail that would cost you $0 to get right, because you know let's be clear, this is a detail which would cost them nothing to get right. And the director doesn't care about that. They don't care enough about the film. You can't trust anything then.
Maybe
it's the M&M clause.
Cyclops got killed off.
Well,
it's the M&M clause.
They got the you hit it on the head. I mean they screw up a little detail like that. Of course they screw up a big detail like I'm sorry, I cannot imagine the Magneto of the previous two films being okay with Xavier just getting randomly killed.
Yeah,
that was just like, acting though.
He would never do that.
Yeah.
Never.
Well, and apparently Xavier's fine now. So what the hell? But to be fair, at least Wolverine was shocked that Xavier wasn't dead.
Maybe we'll get an explanation in Sentinel, in the adventures of Sentinels in the future and such.
I just hope they never tell us. I hope they just say, yeah, he's not anymore. I just move on.
Didn't I see you die?
Yes, you did. Anyways, let's keep moving.
It almost just doesn't matter at this point.
Oh, my God. It's, you know... Oh. It's a thing. It's a thing.
I guess, should we move on to the last show that we're talking about tonight?
To our final topic.
Yeah, let's ask back
and
to the topic.
And then we'll have our episodic Vomit Hat Steve update after the last topic.
Oh, excellent. There's a Vomit Hat Steve update?
There was last time. There will be this time. We'll find out who I'll offend with it this time.
I went, maybe we can go off on a Transformers tangent, too.
Again?
That can be a new thing.
I already insulted Transformers, too.
The last show that we have to talk about is something coming to the CW of all things. Oh boy!
Technically, a network.
We've got the Tomorrow People, which is a remake of a remake of a British children's show.
It's the dark and gritty version of a British children's show.
That always goes well.
It's like, man, I know the Magic School Bus was rough. But Carlos just killed that motherfucker.
From what I get, actually, it's funny that we mentioned the X-Men because the description basically calls it a following a group of young people who possess powers as a result of human evolution. So, maybe a little X-Men-esque.
I want to point out, this is the fourth version of the show. The original version ran between 1973 and 79. Then it was remade in 92. Then it was remade again in 2001.
Oh, sweet Raptor Jesus.
And then, and I think the last time they produced it actually is a set of Big Finish audio productions. So, oh my God.
Also, conveniently, not only is it going to be on following Arrow, but the main actor is the cousin of the main actor from Arrow.
Amazing!
So, that's...
so this is a cross-series continuity as well. Because that's how that works, right?
These are, yes, the meta-humans.
I don't know. I don't think they can have anything referring to Homo Superior in the same universe as DC. I think Marvel might have a problem with that. Because literally, the 1970s series referred to the evolved people as Homo Superior.
Maybe they'll be Homo a little bit better.
I'm telling you, they'll just go with meta-human. Like the Birds of Prey TV show did when it wanted to be X-Men but couldn't.
Oh my God. Actually, you know, here's the thing. Is the Birds of Prey TV series had moments, and for its era, it was good. It does not age well. And sadly, the best part about the show was the theme song, which has been taken out of the DVD and streaming releases. So you kind of go, what's the point of watching this show if they don't have the good theme song? But it did have a very good adaptation version of Oracle, who we all miss.
I thought the best part of it was Barbara Gordon's Batgirl costume that they keep flashbacking to any chance they get, because they probably paid good money for it, and they realized it was going to be a waste if they didn't put it in as many shots as they could.
No, the reason why they did that, and this is you know what I believe to be the real reason, is that people outside the comics were not familiar with who Oracle was. And so by flashing back to that, since so many people had seen kind of the actual genesis of the Barbara Gordon character, the Adam West TV series, that was going to be the Barbara Gordon they were familiar with. So by doing that, you know, because nobody saw the Alicia Silverstone Batgirl, who wasn't even a Barbara, let alone a Gordon. That was all about just like reestablishing to viewers that this was linked to Batman and that she used to be Batgirl in the show. And he had the weirdest variation with Black Canary in that, though.
No kidding. We could do an entire segment on Birds of Prey at some point. Unfortunately, We have to talk about the Tomorrow People.
The Tomorrow People.
The Tomorrow Today. People.
Because Lord knows we need a dark, gritty remake of a kids' show.
Don't we, though? I mean...
What?
Then again, it's on the CW, so there's this part of me that wonders what they mean by dark and gritty, because it...
Well, you know what? Here's the problem.
Generally, if I hear it's on the CW, I just assume that it's for... teenagers.
Well, I assume it's going to be people with well-crafted cheekbones staring listlessly at each other and trying to look deep. You know,
and making Ron Perlman cat monsterless remakes of perfectly good 80s shows.
Oh my God, what the heck was the point of that show? The Beast, if the Beast doesn't look like a Beast, if the Beast is handsome, it's not Beauty and the Beast. I'm sorry. Same problem with Beastly.
Good job, CW, completely missing the namesake of your show.
No, it's been Beastly did that too, that other remake of Beauty and, like, of the classic Beauty and the Beast story, where the guy just looked tatted up. Like, there are women who are into that. Well, it doesn't count.
If the Beast is actually the lady?
Well, that would be fine, except it was Kristen Kruick, who is not unattractive.
Yeah.
It's, you know what it is with Beauty and the Beast is I haven't watched the new series Beauty and the Beast, but reading it read like Dark Angel. It read like the plot to Dark Angel. And so I was just like, wasn't good the first time.
Yeah.
And I watched that original Ron Perlman, you know, Beauty and the Beast when I was a kid. It wasn't good. But it had Quark on it, and that was good.
But at least it had a Ron Perlman cat monster.
Exactly. And he was a beast. I believe all of these shows on the CW would be improved by Ron Perlman in a cat monster costume. It would fit in fine with Supernatural. Vampire Diaries, I'm sure, could find a way to do it. I don't know what Vampire Diaries is about. I just know it's about people with well-defined cheekbones and greasy hair staring at each other, as opposed to the rest of their shows.
All I know about that show is that Roy Harper used to be on it, I guess. But, yeah.
And I'm sure they'll tie that into the new Dracula. Like I was saying, all of this stuff is connected.
But okay, so that's the problem with, you can never tell from the advertising whether or not the CW show is going to be any good. It took me years to actually watch Supernatural because I was convinced it was a show about guys looking pouty and staring at each other, talking about their feelings, not a couple of dudes driving around the country in a muscle car, shooting things in the face and listening to classic rock. You know?
Talking about their feelings.
Occasionally.
When I started watching Arrow, I was hoping for Smallville Part 2. As in, like, another hilariously awful Smallville superhero adaptation?
I liked the Smallville Ollie Queen. That's the thing.
Hey, did we ever find out what the name of that actor was? Because we felt bad for him in the first episode.
No, we didn't. I should look that up.
I'm going to look him up real quick. I do want to give a
shout-out
to Green Arrow from Smallville, who we still feel bad for not getting his own show.
Justin Hartley.
Okay, well then here's to you, Justin Hartley, for doing perfectly fine as Oliver Queen.
Yes,
we're sorry that you didn't get your own show.
He was on. He was a regular on Emily Owens MD for a season, which I think got canceled. But I don't know what that show is.
I've never heard of that.
Sounds doctorly.
Sounds like.
Oh, God.
Was this on?
Oh, God. I feel even worse looking at his resume.
This is a thing.
All right.
Poor Justin
fans,
Hartley.
I need you guys to go start a Kickstarter so that we can feel less sorry for this guy.
He was on Gemini Division, the web series.
Ooh. I don't know what that is either, actually.
Oh, it was a web series. It was called Gemini Division.
Thank you for the useful
information. It starred Rosario Dawson.
Oh, well, at least that's someone I've heard of. That's...
Yeah. No. So
okay.
So the Tomorrow People. There's. I mean, can we say anything interesting about this show other than the fact that it's going to be the pouty brooding hero version of Heroes for 16-year-old girls targeted but as a remake of a British show from the 70s is the fourth version of a British kids, the dark gritty version. Oh my, who does this? What is wrong with you people? Okay, so CW in its history as the WB, because really, the CW is not really, the UPN people are completely separate at this point, because the CW management is really the WB management. So historically, like, they did an adaptation of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which turned out to be good, you know, because it was a terrible movie, right. Turned out to be a great TV series.
Mm-hmm.
But, really, CW? Really? Really? We're disappointed in you. We're disappointed in your parents for letting this happen. They were bad parents for letting you grow up to become TV executives. You thought it was a good idea to greenlight a dark, gritty version of a children's show. If I wanted to see a kids' show character shiv someone, I'd find out what happened to half the cast of the Electric Company. You know, it's... Because I'm sure they're all burnt out. You know, You know,
if I
wanted
to watch a children's character viciously murder someone, I'd watch Man of Steel.
Or Transformers.
Give me your face.
You know what? You know what's hilariously sad about that? My toy of the Fallen's face is actually broken off.
Do you have an Optimus Prime to put it in the hand of?
Yes, I do. I should just do that.
Why not, man? Why not?
We can do it to promote the show. It'll be great.
Yes. Oh, okay. So I think it's it for the tomorrow, people. This is the your regular Vomit Hat Steve update. We said a couple of shows ago that Vomit Hat Steve needed to write into us, and if he didn't write into us, I would make up something that I said he wrote in until he actually writes into us. Remember, Vomit Hat Steve, if you're listening, you can write into us by going to nerdandtie.trhonline.com and clicking on the contact form. It's clickable from every page of the entire site, so WTF, mate. So, Vomit Hat Steve didn't write us this time with, "Hi, I've been on the run from all of those racist southern people you insulted last time, and so I've gone to Canada, where I am from. They did not want me back and lit me on fire, saying I tasted of the dirty Germans." "I don't know what this means. I have been gone from Canada too long and cannot re-assimilate to my own culture. I also may have been in Mexico at the time." Mexican people are fine. There is nothing wrong with Mexicans. Canadians, on the other hand, sons of bitches.
Well,
thanks, Vomit Hat Steve, for not writing that. Next time, we'll see what Vomit Hat Steve does or doesn't write. Because this is a thing that's happening both to you and with you at the same time.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Well, it's good to know that fictional Vomit Hat Steve is at least alive, if not being hunted down.
Real Vomit Hat Steve has a new album coming out. They funded their Kickstarter.
Oh, cool. Excellent.
You want me to tell you the name of his band or something? Screw that. Vomit Hat Steve can write in and tell you the name of his band.
Yeah, Vomit Hat Steve, who I still don't believe is real.
You've met him.
I think he's actually tweeted at me, and I still don't believe that he's real.
He's a real person.
What is real? I don't know.
There's something wrong with all of you. I think you can sign us off from that, Nick.
Yeah, I don't think there's anywhere else to go at this point. As always, we wish you the best from here at Nerd and Tie, and we can't wait to hear what you think about the fall TV season, or at least we'll pretend to care. We'll try to enjoy it ourselves. Signing off on this lovely Sunday, September 29th.
Wow.
Really want it to be November. No.
We never said the date of the episode. 29th. We're bad at this.
Still with us is our awesome guest. Thanks for coming on with us tonight, Brian.
No problem, guys. It was fun.
It's really great to have you here. As always, we've got Trey.
Woohoo!
And reminding you to keep on spocking in the free world.
Stop saying that!
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.